That's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. We go to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Always good when we can bring back guys that we knew from in the day.
Yes!
Left-handed pitcher for the Indians in 2003, 4, and 2007. Did some broadcasting for the team as well. Jason Stanford joining us. Hi, Jason.
Stanny.
Good morning, Phelpsy. Good morning, Bask. How are you, gentlemen?
We are doing well.
How about you?
I'm doing outstanding. It's a beautiful day in Cleveland, right? And we have a lot of good stuff going on. The Guards are playing outstanding baseball right now, and a lot of fun stuff this weekend.
Hey, I do want to talk to you about this weekend before we get into baseball. Tell me about VFR Foundation, veterans, first responders. You got a big day at the ballpark tomorrow. How'd you get involved with that, and what's the scene tomorrow?
Yes, sir. So the best part about it, I've been part of this organization for the last 11 years. It started out with my business partner, Dave Knott. He's the founder of this organization. And the way we got involved, his son was a baseball player at Mercyhurst University. I started teaching him baseball lessons when I was done playing. And one thing led to another. He's now currently a first responder in the Cleveland Heights area as a police officer. And so Dave started this foundation, and I was very, very passionate about it all. We help first responders, all first responders. So military, veterans, fire, police, EMS, dispatchers, canine units, on the mental side. And, you know, we fill the gaps. We are holistic, organic methods along with technology-based. And we're trying to become a niche that will help PTSD and tragedy and trauma, not only with the responders, but their families as well.
That's awesome. And good work, Jason. Appreciate
so
you
much.
Doing stuff like that. This Guardians team is one of the most unlikely first place teams I think I've ever seen in my entire life of watching Major League Baseball. As you looked at this team at the beginning of the season, Jason, could you see this in this team at all? And if so, congratulations. You're the one.
No, Phelps, not at all. And I think the reason I say this, and no, you know, disrespect to the current team right now, but when you have a Hall of Fame manager in Terry Francona, and you know what he's been through, he brought the club in 2016 to the World Series, you didn't expect it. The moment that Shane Bieber goes down, your ace, you know, your horse, he goes down, and then you really don't have anybody to fill the void there. And realistically, offensively, you have Jose Ramirez, and nobody else is really known. You know, you have Josh Naylor, but you have one real all-star constant. But what these guys have done and what Steven has done in that clubhouse and the rest of the group has done has been outstanding. And it's been extremely fun to watch. My son is a huge advocate of the Cleveland Guardians right now at 10 years old. He knows every single player's name. He knows every single player of what they're capable of doing. He plays their video games every night. He gives me a hard time and tells me that I'm a has-been. And it's absolutely comical, you know. But it is really, really fun to watch this group. They are young. They're energetic. And they are. They go about it the right way every night, day in and day out. And it's the next man up mentality, I think.
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise is the success of Stephen Vogt right now. And how much of that is Vogt? How much of that is the front office, their impact on the managerial spot, and just kind of – I mean, I think if you ask me what's the big – there's no way he's not manager of the year. I can't see any way he's not manager of the year.
Well, right now he has to be the front runner. I mean, He's done everything. He's pushed the right buttons. He kept the right staff in place. The front office did a remarkable job in, you know, going out and handpicking him, you know, to follow in Terry's footsteps. And, you know, they have not missed a beat at all. And it goes to show, last week they go to Philadelphia. They beat them 2 out of 3 against the best baseball team in baseball at the time. And then last night they beat up on Baltimore. Baltimore goes out and makes all these big moves. Cleveland makes a couple smaller moves, and they might be the right fit. But right now it's awesome. And then to top it all off, they got a chance again tonight to win another game. And then tomorrow, you know, you've got CC Sabathia coming in for Hall of Fame Day. So it works out perfect.
Jason Stanford joining us, former Indians pitcher. You were developed by this organization. You know the emphasis they put on pitching, how they develop pitching. It's weird to me, Jason, that they're getting it done this year without the standard outstanding starting rotation. What do you see that they're doing? And obviously the bullpen's been lights out, but the rotation isn't what it used to be. The bullpen's been great. I got a couple of ways I want to go with this, but getting it done, first of all, with a rotation that's not typical.
No, you don't have the household names like a Cliff Lee, a Sabathia, a Kevin Millwood back in the days, right? A Bartolo Colon. But you do have guys that go out and they compete. They know their own rhythm of what to do every 5 days. And I think that's huge in this sense, this day and age, with all the analytics that go into it. Carl Willis has been a godsend, right? He was there when I was there. He was my pitching coach. He leaves a little bit. He comes back. And every year in and year out right now, he has a rotation that can go out and compete. And now that the bullpen is so good, they don't have to go 6, 7, 8 innings every night. They can go 4, 5, 6 innings and be just fine because of what they have at the back end. And the bridge guys have done remarkable as well. But when you have the best closer in baseball right now, it's a lot easier to pitch.
Jason, I need some insight into this. You started in your career. You came out of the bullpen in your career. I've had more than a few people contact me and say, I don't want to hear about the bullpen getting burned out and being used so often because they're all young guys. And I'm like, that has nothing to do with it. Explain what it is where a bullpen can get overused and how a guy like Stephen Vogt, a guy like Carl Willis, has to manage those innings and keep these guys fresh. What does that all mean for a pitcher?
There's so much that goes into it. It's not just the wear and tear of utilizing the bullpen that day. It's looking 3 days in advance. It's understanding what series might be coming up and how to utilize the bullpen the right way and how to push the right buttons. And if you have a starter go 2 innings, now you have to lengthen that bullpen a little bit more. And the bullpen mentality, they are accustomed to going 1 inning. They're accustomed maybe to going 2 innings. But now all of a sudden you put the taxi of going 3-plus and maybe going 3 days in a row, that's a lot of wear and tear. A lot of people don't realize we play catch every day. We throw bullpens a couple times a week. Then on top of that, if you go and you warm up and then you sit down and you warm up again, that's more wear and tear on the body. And a lot of fans, they don't realize and get our arms only have so many bullets in the tank to be able to throw in season. So you have to be able to understand 162 games, and if you want to go deep in the playoffs, you have to have a bullpen that's fresh. In August, I think this is going to be the tail sign. This month is going to be so huge for these young guys, especially the bullpen guys and the starters, of what they can obtain day in and day out, because it is a tough month in the month of August.
Hey, when you hear that Bibee's got a sore shoulder, which is not one of the easiest things to say.
Tight.
Sore, tight. What's the difference?
I think they said tight, didn't they?
I read whatever. It's a
shoulder.
She's got a shoulder thing going on, and that they're just going to delay him on his next start. It's not like they're taking him out. They're just going to delay what normally would have been his regular start and push him into next week. When you hear that as a former major league pitcher, what goes through your mind?
Well, I think anytime as a pitcher, anytime you hear something with your elbow, with your shoulder, I'm not going to say there's cause for concern, you know, because there are different ways to manipulate it and get around the system there. But yeah, I mean, as a pitcher and you have a tight shoulder, there are things that have to play into that. And a lot of it too is it might not just be the shoulder. It might be his hips. It might be his legs that are barking as well. So hopefully, you know, it's something very minute, very minimal. You give him an extra couple days rest, you get him back in the rotation and he'll be just fine.
Jason, Jason Stanford joining us, former Indians left-hander. They sent Tristan McKenzie down. Tristan was having some issues up here. You know, who knows what happens with his elbow moving forward. They sent Logan Allen down, guy who had won a lot, you know, was leading the team in wins, actually, when he was sent down and it just had a really good game strikeout-wise. When you are sent down and told to work on things, what is it that a pitcher does? Because, you know, those two guys still might be guys who help this team this year. What do they have to do?
Well, and I think some of it goes back to the trade deadline. You know, the Guardians could have easily gone, they could have sold the farm, and they could have gone out and got a couple big studs, right, to fill the void in the rotation. But you have two kids that have proven themselves at the big league level. They go down, they're trying to maybe reestablish their location, maybe they're trying to reestablish their pitching with the pitches, so whether it's their fastball command, whether it's the breaking ball command, different things like that. I can tell you personally experience, I wasn't the big dude, right? I got called up. I was here to fill a void. I did my job. And then when you get sent out, some of it's mental, emotional. Like, you have to go back down to AAA. You've been doing what you're supposed to be doing, especially with Logan. You know, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, but maybe you don't fit what they're looking for in the next few starts. And so the mental side, you have to prep yourself, because you don't have time to soak and to complain about it. You got to go down, do your job, and figure out how to get back up to the big leagues as quickly as possible. And I think Logan, for him to go down there, he needs to continue to work extremely hard, work in and out, up and down, mix in his pitches. And he could be one of these guys where you call him back up end of August, beginning of September, right before that playoff run. And he could be a guy that fills that void as well. It'll be fun to watch over the next few weeks and his next couple starts down there.
Jason, how do teams excuse me, pace themselves down the stretch? They're six games up. They're playing good baseball. They, you know, did a great job in Philly. They got a huge win last night, but it's still 162. How do they pace themselves down the stretcher to get ready for the playoffs?
I think what the club has done really, really well this year is they haven't had any long losing streaks. And I think a lot of it is the mentality of one game at a time, play for that moment. And they've done that extremely well. So I think that, you know, as you're going into August, you push into September down the road, is making sure that you stay on the throttle. Don't let up at all. They're going to lose some games. You know, everybody loses games, right? The best team loses games. But for them right now is not to get, you know, caught up in all the big trades that happen outside of Cleveland, and to say, hey, this is the club that we have. It's done this well so far. Keep pressing the envelope. Keep trusting each other. And I'm telling you right now, I haven't been in that clubhouse at all this year, but I guarantee that clubhouse is so loose and they're having so much fun that it is a blast to watch right now.
I'm just curious, of all the guys that you play with, who do you still keep in touch with? And I think about and it's funny because I'm just looking down the roster. Like, we still talk to Travis all the time. Brian Anderson's going to join us a little bit later. Are you still talking? It's so weird because I think when we watch as fans and we see these teams come together that we think these guys are going to be friends for a lifetime, but baseball is such a short shelf life for your friends. It's like you might be really good friends with somebody for a year, like best friends, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I wonder how they're doing.
And Jason, just as an example, when this show's over, Baskin and I are toast.
We never talk. You know, yeah, we'll never talk to each other ever again.
Oh, I love it. You guys have been together for a long, long time. I mean, scary. Which has been awesome. But guys that I still keep in touch with on a regular basis, Matt Miller down in Mississippi, keep in touch with him on a regular basis.
He's running his a baseball camp down there? Is that what he's doing?
He does. He runs an academy down there. Yeah. And then also his son Maddox, though, is going to be a superstar stud. Left-handed pitcher, going to Mississippi State next year. So watch for Maddox. And the other guy I keep in touch, you know, not on a regular basis, but from time to time, CeCe Sabathia, with him coming in this weekend, you know, I've reached out to him a little bit. Billy Traber, Jody Garrett, you know, Jody was here last weekend. But, you know, there's certain guys that you still keep really, really close ties with. Billy Traber is still one of my closest buddies. He's out in California. He's a school teacher out there.
He's coaching at his old high school, right?
And he is coaching at his old high school, yes, and doing a great job. You know, he's been very knowledgeable. But it's been fun to keep in touch with those guys. Joe Englert down in Medina, still keep in touch with him. We both run baseball academies. So, you know, it's kind of cool. His son is my son's age. So at some point we'll probably go up against each other in, you know, the travel ball realm. But it is. It's a lot of fun to still have those unique contacts across the board.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
But it's, you know, for me now, you know, moving forward and being out of the baseball world for so long and being part of the VFR Foundation, you know, tomorrow is going to be – it's a huge day for us. It's a national day. So I don't know if a lot of people realize this, but VFR National Day, it's happening tomorrow. It's the first Saturday of August. We did it on purpose because we want to correlate it and tie it into Major League Baseball at some point. My business partner, Dave Knott, his idea and vision right now is to have a responder throw out a first pitch on National VFR Day across the board. So 15 stadiums would have a responder throwing out a first pitch at some point.
Okay, so tomorrow, also CeCe's there tomorrow too, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So
yes.
CeCe's got a day.
Tomorrow.
Okay, go ahead.
Yep. So CeCe Sabathia, you know, coming tomorrow for Hall of Fame Day to be inducted, and then also our National Day. So we have close to 1,000 responder families that are going to be at the game tomorrow.
That's awesome.
You know, on behalf of the VFR Foundation and our sponsors, we have a big pregame show going on tomorrow, starting at 3 p.m. at the Corner Alley. So anybody that wants to come and attend that, it's open to the public. All proceeds are going to go back to the BFR Foundation and continue to help programming here with the organization. But it's been such a blast and a privilege and an honor to get to know a lot of these responders that we're helping.
Great to have you with us, Jason.
Danny is always great, man.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much, guys. We'll be in touch.
Jason Stanford joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. That's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. Andy's part of that podcast, aren't you?
I am. I wasn't this week, though. He did a great job filing reports. He did last year. He had so many great one-on-ones last year. You really want to go back and listen to those if you're a Browns fan. If you're not, then you have been shamed.
The NFL season unofficially kicked off last night, the Hall of Fame game, the first preseason game of the year. It was the Houston Texans against the Chicago Bears, backup quarterbacks in there, Brett Rypien and Davis Mills, and they look good. They really did. But they're playing against guys who might not make, you know, an NFL team this year. So regardless, they look good. The big thing to watch last night was the debut of the new kickoff rule in the NFL. And let's go ahead and preface it with this, Andy. Whatever they did last night isn't anything like you would assume they're going to do once the regular season starts. Now, can you change it drastically? Yeah, you can add some wrinkles, some different things. They rolled out the real generic version of the kickoff last night and what it's going to be. What did you think? You know, and folks, if you missed it, you can go to NFL.com. They have one thing where they put every kickoff from last night together, and you can watch every kickoff that happened last night, which is what I did.
I got to tell you, I felt uneasy when the players weren't moving and they were frozen when the ball was in the air. That was my first feeling. Then I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And especially for the first couple kickoffs, I was like, the end result feels like it's the same. So that was kind of like you said, Jeff, I don't think we've seen anything near what this is going to be, but we did kind of get a feel for what it's going to be, a tiny one. And trying to understand the landing zone, I still think is going to be interesting. Where they're going to kick the ball is going to, like, I still don't think this is anywhere near. It is weird to watch the team receiving have all their guys line up and then run backwards to protect.
That was the thing I was caught off guard by.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the teams line up across from each other and they're sitting there staring at each other. And I wasn't expecting it. Maybe I should have been. The receiving team, the guys dropped off the yard line that they were on, dropped back 4 or 5 yards.
At least it probably somewhere between 2 to 3 yards, because I froze it at that point because I was like, this is just weird.
And the only reason I thought that was weird was, okay, if they moved forward, wouldn't that clear a little more space for their guy to return? Instead, they're allowing the kickoff team to run toward the ball carrier without any real contact for about 8 yards. And I was just expecting something different. So rather than the blockers moving toward, you know, the guys who were trying to make the tackle, they were just kind of retreating and allowing them to get more of a run. And the blockers were backpedaling, which is no way to throw a block. I just thought that was interesting. It was on almost every kickoff, wasn't it?
Yeah, the other thing that was interesting on the kickoff, like I was just watching again the Bears' initial kickoff, that there were 4 or 5 guys on the strong side of the football that were full speed and had been passed by the returner. So they were in the play on the other side. Like, the ball was coming up through the middle, and they were off on the left-hand side. And they were already farther downfield the wrong way. So now you can see where that electricity comes from, where you can see where the option is. But yet the Bears had one guy in pursuit coming back off the weak side, and they still had 2 guys that were able to make a play. But if that runner or the returner gets it, it's one cut and a touchdown. So everything just happens in a more compact area.
Which, again, leads to the thought of, okay, if you can bust out of that compact area, you're going to have a much better chance of returning a kick for a touchdown than I would think that, you know, otherwise. One other thing I want to bring up.
I noticed a lot of holding going on too. Yeah, and I was like, well, they're probably not going to call it because, you know, preseason.
Did you also notice that there was a 12th man allowed on the field? It was windy, and so they would run somebody out to hold the ball in place for the kicker. And then that guy just ran off the field.
I didn't catch that. I don't know how I missed that. Hmm.
It was kind of weird.
Man, they got some rain last night. Yeah. We all did. I mean, in fact,
that game was called off late in the third quarter,
I feel bad for the Hall of Fame, man. They get jinxed sometimes that was on terrible. Some of the stuff.
But it also shows what the NFL thinks of that game from a competitive standpoint. We know it's not a competitive game. But rather than, hey, we're going to gut this out, we're going to wait. No, hey, we're good. Thanks, everybody. Which if you're ESPN and ESPN's televising the game up against the Olympics, you probably thought, thanks. Thanks a lot. Hey, glad we came all the way here for this.
The other thing I kept thinking about is if they go to 18 games and get rid of the preseason,
mm-hmm.
what are they going to do with the Hall of Fame game?
First game of the regular season.
I agree with that, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I think you're right.
I think they will play one preseason game a year.
The new kickoff, it's interesting that we're seeing that for the first time because we have a man who basically was known and is going into the Hall of Fame because of his work on kickoffs and punt returns and everything else, and that's Devin Hester, the former Chicago Bear. And he was asked about the new kickoff rule. Here's what he had to say.
First of all, I feel like it will bring life back into the returning game. I feel like it will open up more doors. You're going to start seeing guys get recruited as returners and be their main focal point. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I know a guy like me, I would love to be in this situation.
So there's a guy who made his mark as a kick returner, excited about it. That was courtesy of the NFL Network, Devin Hester, soon to be a Hall of Famer. So I'm curious to see what happens, Andy. You know, do you need a different kind of returner? We've seen some folks talk about that, you know. You need a different type of return guy for this new kickoff. I don't know if that's true. We'll find out quickly. I would think if you...
So we're going to see the 100-meter dash tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow? Saturday? I can't remember. It's coming up at the Olympics. I want one of those guys. That's who I want. I want the fastest man in the America returning my kicks. Because all they have to do is learn how to...
Bust through one guy. One gap, maybe.
You with me on that?
See, I kind of go the opposite. I wouldn't necessarily go with the fastest guy, but I thought that at least watching that opening kickoff, I thought that if he broke a tackle or two, it's daylight after that.
But maybe then that guy gets caught if he's not a really fast guy. If you have an absolute sprinter type,
mm-hmm.
and he just gets a little bit of, you know, because nobody's going to have an angle on him.
Right.
You know, as opposed to another kickoff where a guy might be able to have an angle on a guy.
I understand the logic with that, but I also look at, you know, some of the video this week from Kansas City. I saw Xavier Worthy, obviously, you know, fastest 40-yard dash in combine history. But yet the guy's getting pancaked out there by every defender because he tries to run across the middle because of how light he is as a player. So, like, I think that you're trying to find that balance, and it's why it's somebody like Malachi Corley with the Jets, where, you know, he ran a 4.4 40, and then you have, you know, he's 215 pounds, and he used to be a running back. Throw him back there, all of a sudden, I think that makes a lot of sense. So I don't think it's now purely speed as it used to be with the kickoffs, but now I think that it's trying to find that balance of speed and power from that return spot.
All right, here's what I want you to do, and you can either do this at 4:30 in the morning tonight or on Sunday at 3:55 Eastern, the men's 100-meter final. And I want you to watch Noah Lyles, and I want you to watch him run this race, and then I want you to ask yourself, what would he look like if he just caught a football? And is that the guy you would want to run it back? Because I would love to see it. I don't know.
Unlike Anthony Schwartz with Olympic speed?
Yeah, I get. But you know what? We never really used Schwartz as a kick returner, did we?
We never got to see his speed.
No,
period.
And we always thought that would be great.
Dang, holding on to the football thing.
Tell me you would. I would love to see what Noah Lyles looks like returning a kick in this scenario. I don't know what, you know, if his body could take the hits. It only takes one or two to kind of derail a career. But I would love to see it. I would absolutely love to see it at least once. Well, if I was a team, I would bring him in right after the Olympics. Although he's now, well, you know, with that Diamond League, he can make a ton of money. He can make a ton of money running track now, too. So,
well, think back. You've got a good memory? Remember Bob Hayes?
Yeah.
Former Dallas Cowboy who was a gold medalist in the 100 meters back in the 60s. Maybe that's what. Maybe that's.
Well, and, I'm forgetting. There was a track star that they brought in that it didn't work. And it's probably in the last 25 years.
For our team?
Yeah. No, not for the Browns. Just for.
Well, the 49ers had Ronaldo Nehemiah.
That's who it was. Ronaldo Nehemiah.
And he was a high hurdler. But he played wide receiver. He was okay. Skeets, remember?
Yes.
Ronaldo Skeets Nehemiah.
Yeah, I was trying to remember who it was. I don't know. I would love to see what that would look like. I don't know if it would be successful or not. But if you have that kind of speed and you are able to sneak through a hole real quick, it's a touchdown every time because no one's catching him. No one is catching him.
I'm curious to see what it looks like when they play for real because then we're going to see some of the creativity that special teams coaches have been trying to incorporate into this. We're going to see no secrets given away in the preseason. None. And if any team does give away a secret on a kickoff return, Andy, shame on them in the preseason. So get ready for week one because that could be absolutely silly once they get that going. If you have any thoughts on the new kickoff rule, we'd love to hear from you. 216-474-0092. I had a little situation yesterday.
You okay?
I'm okay.
All right. Well, I worry when
the
you
van's
say
okay. But I had a little situation yesterday.
Uh-oh. Well, about the van?
It's coming up on Baskin and Phelps. Mac Robinson, running the show today, and Meredith's taking your phone calls, 216-474-0092. I got a little escapade from yesterday after we hear from Lewis and Shaker. We were talking about the new kickoffs in the NFL. We saw it last night. Lewis, what'd you think?
I like it, but it's not so much about power. It's about speed, deception, peripheral vision, and reaction time. I mean, if this guy can set up his blocks, you go towards one hole, and another hole, you get everybody migrate to that one hole, then another hole is going to open up. If you can see it from your periphery and you react to it, one cut, you're gone. If you break that initial line, you're gone. You're going to see a lot of kickoff returns. I like it. I love it.
Lewis, would you like to see a guy like Noah Lyles have a shot at being a kick returner?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, I mean, the guy runs a 9.81, man. I mean.
Well, there are a lot of fast guys.
No, this is the fastest. He's the fastest, Jeff. He is the fastest.
Oh, that would be perfect for him because he zipped towards that hole. Everybody's going to be like afraid, and they're going to migrate towards that hole. One cut, he's gone.
The Browns need to sign him as soon as the Olympics.
I know he's that bad.
Yeah.
Get on that, Paul DePodesta. Lewis, thank you very much. Not a bad thought.
Oh, bring him in. I'm ready. I'll tell you what, I'd probably take almost anybody who's qualified for the finals in the Olympics.
Well, now, see, there you go. It doesn't have to be Noah Lyles. It could be somebody who's really fast.
Oh, no. If you've seen Jeff, just do me a favor. I've never asked you to do this in 13 years. I want you to check this guy out this weekend.
Oh, I have. Okay. I've watched him.
Okay.
Yeah, I watched him in the Olympic trials.
Oh.
And other things. He can flat out move. And he's fun.
He's flamboyant.
He's into it. Like he screams when he gets introduced and stuff.
Yeah,
he's like football player.
Yes,
rather than track guy.
Yes, yeah. I might be the only person in the world talking about this right now.
The minivan needed an oil change yesterday.
Okay,
and it's got a lot of miles, so it's had a lot of oil changes over the years. And I bought apparently 15 to 20 years ago.
How many miles on it?
394,000.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
So it's got a lot of miles. And, you know, I drive it because I get to work and I have kids who go to college. And so, hey, it still runs, so I'm driving it until it drops. So I bought an oil change card many years ago. And then I forgot I had it.
Would you like this story to define you, by the way?
No.
Okay.
No. I bought this oil change card from the dealer.
Okay.
And it was 10 oil changes for $170. Okay, that's a deal. That's $17 an oil change, right?
We don't do math on the show, Jeff. Just remind
me. So that's, you know, by today's standards, that's dirt cheap. But I forgot I had this card. And I used it four or five times and put it back in the glove box.
When did you buy this
car? In the
car?
Owner's manual. It's a 2003.
So the car is a 2003. Yeah. When do you think you bought this oil package?
2005. So okay. And I forgot I had it for like a decade.
Oh, okay.
And then I happened to be looking in the owner's manual. I found this card and I thought, well, I'll be. So I went back in, and every time I would go in, you know, they would laugh at me because I had this ancient card that didn't exist anymore. So I made an appointment and I went in and took the thing in.
Right.
And, you know, you got to show them if you have a card beforehand. So the guys in the service department are laughing about it.
Right.
Look what he has, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
It's funny.
Does it say that on the card?
On the card?
It says, please present before oil change. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So I did. And so I get the oil changed, and, you know, the car's a mess. It's 20 years old, and it's been driven like crazy, right?
Right.
So, and the guys are great guys in the service department, love the sales staff. These are really nice folks. And
do they have a tetanus shot before they work on
the
car?
The guy came out, and he said, took me over to the cashier booth, and he said, you know, hey, and I presented the card, and he goes, yeah, you got to punch that twice now.
Wait, what?
And
did
I
say that on the card?
I had four remaining still.
Okay.
And it said, you got to punch that twice. And I said, I'm sorry? You got to punch it twice. I said, well, why? I got one oil change. And he said, well, you know, oil costs have gone up.
Yeah, that's not your fault.
My thought exactly.
No, wait a second. Now I got to ask you, is there an expiration date? Is there anything that says?
There's nothing. It says.
Dependent on the cost of oil.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Wow.
So. And then the guy from service walked away, and I'm there with the cashier, right? The nice lady who's taking care of that. Mm-hmm. And she said, that's only the second one of those I've ever seen. I said, yeah, but punching it twice, that's not. And she said, well, the only other time I ever saw one, they made me punch it three times.
Mm.
So
what?
She said, well, let me call.
Let me double check. There's no expiration date on this thing, right?
No.
Okay.
And so she called somebody, and the person she talked to said, yeah, you got to punch it three times.
What?
And she said, yeah, she said three times. I said, well, that, and she goes, I'm going to do it twice because otherwise that would leave you with one. I said, that's not right. And so she called somebody from service in, the guy, I guess, who was running service.
Right.
And she said, you know, hey, he thinks that you should punch it once and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just kind of like putting my hands in the air like, hey, you know. Because and they'd used the card in like last year or so and only punched it once.
Yeah, because it's good for one oil change.
The guy said, yeah, well, you know, with oil prices and all, we got to punch it.
But the oil prices aren't your fault.
I said, wait a minute. I said, it says here on the card that I bought 10 oil changes for $170.
Yes.
It doesn't say I bought 8.
You go, Ralph Nader. You tell him.
Well, that made him pause and he went, I'll be right back.
Oh,
and he walked
now
out.
We're getting somewhere.
He walked out into the showroom. I don't know who he talked to there.
Did you? You didn't drop it. Do you know who I am?
Oh heaven! Why no? Why would you do that?
I'm just making sure.
I was hoping to win my argument, not lose it.
Okay, all right.
Although you know, I've spent 13 years arguing with you.
That's true.
I mean, but
and you're still winless. That's great.
I had just spent the last 15, 20 minutes sitting with couple of the sales guys who I do know, and you know, one of them's a buddy of mine, the other one I met yesterday, and we were talking sports and everything else, and he walked back out there, so I don't know who he talked to. And the guy came back and he said to the lady, punch it once.
Ah, you won.
Well, the card says
otherwise you'd have to go back and charge those guys for talking sports with you because that's your business. And you could have gone back and said, I'm going to charge you, I don't know, let me find out, let me call back to the station, find out what a spot is. Let me find out, and now you're going to pay me for that.
You know, I mean, if I,
guys,
I didn't want to, and I like these guys. They're nice people. They've always helped me out. They're very nice. But I think the point was the card said 10 oil changes for $170. It didn't say.
No expiration date.
It didn't say depending on the cost of oil. There's no expiration date. And so it worked, and I got the oil change just as I bought the card for 10 oil changes. I have three left. I'm sure they can't wait to see me come back.
Because when you come back.
My kid bought a car there like 2 years ago.
Okay.
You know, so it's not like they haven't seen me in 20 years.
Okay, so we're definitely, outing the place. I just want to make sure everyone knows that. I love these guys. Yeah, okay.
And I went out, and they did the right thing. And my wife and I test drove some things a couple of months ago, you know, looking ahead to when we replace the piece of you-know-what van.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy also said, the first guy who helped me said, yeah, our technician, they wanted to put it up on the rack. But when they put it up on the rack and it started, there were some issues with the car. You know, so there's the undercarriage. There's a lot of rust. I said, yeah, I know. There's a lot of rust. He said, be careful when you drive it. I said,
did you tell him? Did you have a tetanus shot?
I'm well aware.
Did you ask him if he had a tetanus shot?
He said this one. He said, our technician said, with 394,000 miles on the car, it's pretty much near the end of its life. And I said, yeah, you think?
I don't understand.
But then when I got in the car to leave, the guy that said punch it once said, put another 100,000 on it. Let's go.
Jeff, I don't understand people's infatuation with your van that's almost at 400,000, because I'm telling you that when I go out, and like my wife and I were at dinner with my brother-in-law and my sister last week, okay? Mm. And there was this, I'll out them because they were a great group. It was the Aurora Alumni Association. We were at this Mexican place out in Aurora, okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, so we love going there. We think food's great, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, there was a swarm of them because they were doing like this kind of a restaurant hop thing.
Yeah.
And you had to get, so there were a number of great people that I met that night. And Jeff, if I met 10 people, okay, that night that all said, hey, I listened to the show, thanks, always great to, at least five of them, and I'm not kidding, brought up your van.
That's funny.
And they'll say, how's Jeff's van? Or, I can't believe Phelps has that van. It is mind-blowing to me
the
connection
people
have with your van.
You've seen it. It looks like crap.
Oh.
But it runs well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get the oil changed regularly. That's the thing you're supposed to do.
Jeff, think about what you would be driving if you chose not to have children. I think about that often.
Andy, you and I wouldn't be sitting here right now.
We'd probably be retired by now.
I was lucky enough to finally meet someone that I wanted to marry.
But I would rather work than, just telling you.
I didn't have kids until I was a month before 40. But so that, you know, that kind of changed things a little bit. But the old van's running along. So
what is the infatuation with the van?
Because
people can relate?
Sometimes. I don't know if I'm going to get to 400,000.
What? No,
I'm at 394.
Come on,
even my 89-year-old mother said you got to go for it. But
you got to go for 400,000 on this thing.
It's got some rust. The undercarriage has some rust.
The rust isn't going to stop you from driving it.
It drives great.
So why would you turn away from it? Jeff,
you want it to be safe, but it seems to be going fine.
I'm sure that there was someone that would. You know, I'm always talking about statues. Someone should take your van once you hit 400,000 miles.
We should throw it into Lake Erie.
No.
We can add it to the bricks of the old stadium.
No, put it on a pedestal and put it right out there in front of their showroom, like they do all the great cars that you're always driving by.
Wow.
It's like that's a silly eye candy that car dealers do, right? And you drive by, like, I can't tell you how many times I've driven by Valley and I'm like,
I thank my guys because they did the right thing. You know, they were just doing their job. Mm-hmm. Okay, they were just doing what they were told, but they did the right thing, and I got an oil change basically for $17.
Yeah, I mean the card says no expiration.
Right.
Yeah, of course.
Right. So they did the right thing,
Jeff. I mean, they had to do the right thing there, right?
They did. So that's outstanding.
But the other part of it is it's like all of a sudden, you got to punch that twice. Why is it your money? Seriously. Was it that person's money?
And if I could have the 170 back, you know, they took my 170.
Yeah, they
invested
had no problem
it.
Then.
What would it be worth now? 500.
Yeah,
right?
That's the stuff that drives me
had
nuts.
I invested it?
That's bait and switch or something like that?
Well, there was nothing like that because they did the right
thing. They did the right thing.
I'll be more than happy to buy cars there in the future. And then they'll see me in another 20 years. Brian Anderson, our other left-handed pitcher buddy. Going to join us next right here on Baskin and Phelps.